Narayana Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada.
January 13, 2008, in Auckland, Bhagavatam 5.14.1.
Informal get-together with his divine grace. Prabhupada was relaxed, leaning back against the bolsters of his thick cotton-padded asana. That was exactly the way I saw Prabhupada when the first time that we got to go in his darshan in summer 74. Exactly. He was very relaxed and he was sitting like this. His dhoti was up here. You could see his leg and his foot. And he was leaning against the bolsters and smiling and very... Smiling and chatting with us about the state of affairs in the world, his hand was in his bead bag and his tulsi mala clicked together audibly as he ran them between his fingers and thumb, his mind always fixed on the holy name, even as he shared his thoughts on modern civilization. So, from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14, starting this chapter. You said, do you usually read the summaries or not?
Sometimes.
All right, we've got a 2.5-page summary and a 1-page word for word, a full page translation, and a 1.5-page purport.
I think the summary should be for homework.
The summary should be, this is the problem with teachers here. Throw out all of the teachers. There's no homework, Prabhupada. There's home fun, but there's no homework. In Krishna consciousness, everything is fun. Yes. Okay. So does anybody remember what happened yesterday?
About the day before.
What happened when Maharaj Rahugana heard the instructions of Jedbar? Well, was it Mahugana who wanted more explanation? Who wanted more explanation?
Parikshit
Maharaj. What happened when Mahugana heard the whole story? He became what?
Realized.
He became realized. I remember that was that question. Was it you who asked that question? Was it theoretic someone who's sitting right in that spot? Whether Mahugana's realization was theoretical, you know, just, oh yeah, I'm not this body, like intellectual or actual realization. So he realized I'm not the body, and that was the end of that. And then Jed Bard went on in his life. And it was Maharaj Pariksit who said, what did he talk about anyway? Now we already know what he talked about because of Prabhupada's purports. But if we had just been reading the verses, you know, the literal verses, we're just reading, what would we be reading about? Maybe you can tell me what's in the summary. What would we be reading? Who can remember some of the things in the forest of material enjoyment? Let's see who can remember. Instead of just reading the summary, we'll create our own summary.
There's jackals, yes. And what else is in this forest?
Mosquitoes.
I mean, anyone who was here for Mai Swami's class cannot forget that there's mosquitoes. All right. And what else is in this forest?
There were owls.
That was the same verse. Crickets, yeah, okay. Well, that was supposed to be the most memorable class of the chapter. It was the owls, the crickets, and the mosquitoes. Okay, what else was there? Anyone remember the verse on the chapter? Do I get a failing grade as a teacher?
Creepers and
vines. There were creepers and vines. What else were there?
Owls,
yes. What else? That was the class I gave. Well, I get at least a C. There were sharp stones when one is climbing up the mountain, right? When we're climbing up the mountain. What else is there in this forest?
Hunger.
Yeah, it's hunger. And when someone gets really hungry, what do they get? Angry at their family members, right? What else do we have? Let's see. Look at the summary here. Ferocious animals, jackals, foxes.
Wives and children.
Those were the wives and children, yeah. The sannyasis had a field day with that back in the day. I used to go home from Bhagavatam class crying 9/10 of the time, seriously. Really did. Not an ecstasy, no. All right, what else do we have there? Oh, what was another thing your Mai Swami talked about death is like a... snake, and what kind of snake? Like, yeah, a python, right? It's talking about how it sneaks up on you, right? That was a really good one. Okay. And sometimes there's a bogus savior, like a crane. All right, so let's say that was the whole story. Right, you meet some saintly person, and what's going on in life? And he says, well, there's crickets, there's owls, there's jackals, there's foxes, there's a mountain with thorns, and sometimes you're hungry. And there's cranes, and then there's a tree that doesn't have any fruits, and there's this big mountain, and there's pythons. Okay. Wow. I'm not this bad. I've become Brahman realized. Now I'm going to worship God. Thank you very much. So there's other places in the Bhagavatam like that, too. When Narada Muni preaches to the sons of Daksha, he just says that there's a hole, and there's a this, and there's a wheel, and they say, yes, we're going to surrender to Krishna. So Maharaj Parikshit has just asked, Sukadeva Goswami says, can you please explain this? So now Sukadeva Goswami is going to give the meaning of the allegory. And what's very interesting about this first verse is, in this first verse, which is quite long, this really is sort of a summary of the essence of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And I also find it particularly interesting because this whole section is primarily what, positive or negative? Primarily negative. By the way, in psychology, you know, each of us has a different personality type, like we each have slightly different color hair. So in psychology, some people are primarily motivated by the positive, and some are primarily motivated by the negative. Very few of us are on the extremes or in trouble. But if you think of what's the little voice, how does the little voice in your mind try to motivate you? By telling you what you did good or by telling you what you did bad? I'll give you some idea. So the people who are motivated by the positive, for them, they're much more interested, oh, this is a spiritual world, it's like this, and everything. And the people who are motivated by the negative, they're more interested, oh, the material world is really awful. And you'll find that both of them, the positive and negative, are in the Shastra, usually in somewhat different sections. But here in this verse, Sukadeva Goswami is going to give us the essence of what is this problem. Why are we in this place with crickets and mountains and thorns and owls and jackals and foxes? How did we get here? How did we get here? What's the cause of our being here? What is the summary of our problem? And how do we get out? All in one verse, which I've illustrated there on the board.
Did you draw that?
Yes, I did draw that.
And 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10 for what age level? Okay, so I want to see how many of you can guess what that symbolizes when we get, you probably won't be able to, when we get to the end of the purport. Maybe we should give a Maha Suite. You should never have teachers give classes, though. It's terrible. Maybe we should give a Maha Suite to yourself. Okay, this is a difficult verse, and please bear with me, and those of you who know Sanskrit, I apologize to you in advance. Sama Vajra Sa Esha Dehatma Mainam Sadvatvi Guna Vishesha Vikalpita Kushala Kushala Sama Vahara Vinirita Vividya Deha Valibir Vyoga Samyoga Dhyanadi Samsananubhavasya Dwara Bhutena Sad Indriya Vargena Tasmin Durga Davad Asugame Asugame Dan Vyapatita Ishvarasya Bhagavato Vishnur Vasa Vartina Mayaya Jivaloka Yam Yata Vanik Sartorita Para Swadeha Nishpadita Kama Nubhava Smasa Navad Aishvatman Ayam Samsaratavyam Gato Nadyapi Vahaya Bahu Prati Yoge Hastat Tapo Pasa Manin Hari Guru, this is the probably said this is the most important part of this verse. Hari Guru Charanaravinda Marukaranu Paravim Avaruhe. Okay, we all heard some words we recognize in that, I hope. Saha. The self-realized devotee Sukadev Goswami.
The self-realized
devotee. Ha. Indeed. Uvacha. Spoke. Saha. He, the conditioned soul. Esaha. This one. Deha Atma Maninam. Of those who foolishly take the body to be the self. Sattva Adi. Of Sattva, Raja, and Tama. Guna. By the modes. Vishesha. Particular. Vikalpita. Falsely constituted. Kushala. Sometimes by favorable actions. Akushala. Sometimes by very unfavorable actions. Samavahara. By a mixture of both. Vinirmita. Obtained. Vivida. Various types. Deha Avalibhi. By the series of bodies. Vyoga Samyoga Adi. Symptomized by giving up one type of body, Vyoga, and accepting another, Samyoga. That was pretty good. I was testing you to see. That was meaning. Symptomized by giving up one type of body, Vyoga, and accepting another, Samyoga. Yoga means coming together. V-yoga is coming apart and Samyoga is coming together. So V-yoga is giving up a body and Samyoga is coming together in the body. Anadi Sansara Anubhavasya. Of the perception of the beginningless process of transmigration. Dwara Bhutena. Existing as the doorways. Sat Indriya Vargena. By these six senses, the mind and knowledge acquiring senses, namely the eyes, ears, tongue, nose, and skin. Tasmin, on that, Durga Advavat, like a path that is very difficult to traverse. Asugame, being difficult to pass through. Advani, on a path in the forest. Apatita, happened. Ishrasya, of the controller. Bhagavataha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu. Vasavartina, acting under the control. Mayaya, by the material energy. Jivaloka, the conditioned living entity. Ayam, this. Yata, exactly like. Vanik, a merchant. Sa Artha, having an object. Artha para. I was very attached to money. Swadeha nishpadita. Performed by his own body. Karma. The fruits of activities. Anubhavaha. Who experiences. Samsana vat. Let's just do that. Samasana vat. Asi vatammayam. Like an inauspicious cemetery or place of burial. Samsara atavyam. In the forest of material life. Gataha. Having entered. Na. Not. Adya api. Until now. Vipala. Unsuccessful. Pala means a what? A fruit or a result. So vipala, we didn't get any fruits. Bahu prati yoga. So bahu means many. Full of great difficulties and varieties of miserable conditions. Very interesting. Prati yoga. Prati means, does that mean like without? Towards. So there's many, in many ways you're going towards meaning, but you don't achieve it. Something like the donkey with the carrot. So prati yoga, you're trying to achieve connection. Interesting, very interesting. The Prabhupada translates that, full of great difficulties and varieties of miserable conditions. Iha, whose activities here in the material world. Tat, tapa, upasa, manim. Which pacifies the miseries of the forest of material life. Here's what Prabhupada says is the most important part of this verse. Hari Guru Charana Aravinda. To the lotus feet of the Lord and his devotees. Marukara Anupadavini. The road followed in pursuance of devotees. Who are attached like bumblebees. Avarunde. Gain. So you've got this Hari Guru Charana Aravinda. Hari means Krishna. Guru. Guru. Prabhupada's not saying here those devotees. Charana. Feet. Lotus feet. Aravinda. Well. So the lotus feet of the devotees. And then Marukara is the bumblebees. Anupadavim. Pada is the feet, so Anu is following. So there's Krishna and the Vaishnavas who have their lotus feet, and then the Marukara, the bumblebees, are following, just like bees will follow a lotus. Right? So they're following the lotus feet of Krishna and the devotees. Is that a nice image? Okay. Now this is a long translation, but you will be tested. Sometimes I think, we said, okay, translation, purport time and sleep time. So we're going to ask you how many things you can't remember at the end. Remember at the end of the purport, I'm going to ask you if you have any idea why I put this up there. Translation. When King Parikshit asked Sukadeva Goswami about the direct meaning of the material forest, Sukadeva Goswami replied as follows. My dear king, a man belonging to the mercantile community, Vanik, is always interested in earning money. Sometimes he enters the forest to acquire some cheap commodities, like wood and earth, and sell them in the city at good prices. Similarly, the conditioned soul, being greedy, enters this material world for some material profit. Gradually, he enters the deepest parts of the forest, not really knowing how to get out. You ever feel like that? Having entered the material world, the pure soul becomes conditioned by the material atmosphere, which is created by the external energy under the control of Lord Vishnu. Now that we have in the verse, Ishvarasya, what is that? Ishvarasya Bhagavataha, by the control of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Thus the living entity comes under the control of the external energy, Daivi Maya, living independently and bewildered in the forest. He does not attain the association of devotees, who are always engaged in the service of the Lord. Once in the bodily conception, he gets different types of bodies, one after the other. Remember we had that? Viyoga and Samyoga. Under the influence of material energy and impelled by the modes of material nature, sattva guna, rajaguna, tamaguna, we had that in the verse, or was it sattva adi, by sattva and others. In this way, the conditioned soul goes sometimes to the heavenly planets, sometimes to the earthly planets, and sometimes to the lower planets and lower species. That's an expansion of its viyoga. Thus, he suffers continuously due to different types of bodies. These sufferings and pains are sometimes mixed. Sometimes they are very severe, and sometimes they are not. These bodily conditions are acquired due to the conditioned soul's mental speculation. He uses his mind and five senses to acquire knowledge, and these bring about different bodies in different conditions. Using the senses under the control of the external energy mind, the living entity suffers the miserable conditions of material existence. He's actually searching after relief, but he is generally baffled. That was his bahu pratiyoga. Bahu, great inability to achieve the goal. Although sometimes he is relieved after great difficulty. Struggling for existence in this way, he cannot get the shelter of pure devotees who are like, what are they like? Bumblebees engaged in loving service at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Okay, somebody tell me something from the verse. The conditioned soul is like a merchant who's gone into a
forest
and is looking for something to sell, right? Okay, he's looking for something to sell. And as he goes in the forest, he gradually gets deeper and deeper. All right, and having entered this, he becomes conditioned by the material energy, which is under the control of who? Krishna. It's Vishnu. Krishna will do it. And then under the control of the energy of Lord Vishnu, the conditioned soul is associating with different modes of nature, due to which he gets different bodies. And sometimes the living entity is enjoying, sometimes he is suffering, and sometimes it's mixed. Right? And he doesn't get the association of the devotees who are like bumblebees. And there's a few other things I didn't say. Anybody remember something we didn't just say?
He uses his mind and senses to acquire knowledge.
Okay, he's trying to get knowledge through his mind and senses. Purport. The most important information in this verse is? What's the most important information in this verse?
Hari Guru Charanaravindam.
Hari Guru Charanaravindam. Madhukaram. What was the next word? Anuparavim. Anuparavim. Okay. You get this whole thing? The most important information in this verse is? Hari. Let's try. Hari. Guru. Charana. Avinda. Madhukaranam. Paravim. Anuparavim. Anuparvam, following the feet. Okay? Let's try it again. Hari, Guru, Charana, Aravinda, Marukaram, Anuparvam. Do you know that when Prabhupada wanted us to repeat the verses, did you know that he expected us to memorize them by doing that? That was his purpose? Did you know that? In the beginning days of ISKCON, he didn't do that. And after all, he instituted that the speaker said the verse and then everyone repeated it. And he said that, yes, by doing this, you will learn all the verses. Hasn't happened to me. Okay, but let's at least learn this one line, which Prabhupada says the most important information. Let's try. Well, I'm going to ask you from the end of the class. Let's try to say it again. Hari, Guru, Charana, Paravindam, Marukarana, Anu, Paravim. And that means? Hari is? Krishna. Guru is? Guru or Prabhupada devotees. Charana Aravindam, lotus feet, Marukaram, bumblebees, Anuparavim, following the feet. In this material world, the conditioned souls are baffled by their activities, and sometimes they are relieved after great difficulty. On the whole, the conditioned soul is never happy. He simply struggles for existence. Actually, his only business is to accept the spiritual master, the Guru, and through him, he must accept the lotus feet of the Lord. This is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Guru Krishna Prasadi Kaya Bhakti Latabij. People struggling for existence in the forests or cities of the material world are not actually enjoying life. They are simply suffering different pains and pleasures. Suffering different pleasures. Generally pains that are always inauspicious. They try to get released from these pains, but they cannot due to ignorance. For them it is stated in the Vedas, tadvignantam sarvam evavagacchat. When the living entity is lost in the forest of the material world and the struggle for existence, his first business is to find a bona fide guru who is always engaged at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. After all, if he is all eager to be relieved of the struggle for existence, he must find a bona fide guru and take instructions at his lotus feet. In this way, he can get out of the struggle. Since the material world is comparing him to a forest, it may be argued that in the Kali Yuga, modern civilization is mainly situated in the cities, so Prabhupada is saying. Maybe some people will say that this analogy doesn't work anymore, because now we don't live in forests. A great city, however, is like a great forest. Who here has ever lived in the middle of a big city? Is it something like a forest? They call it the concrete jungle. Actually, city life is more dangerous than life in the forest. If one enters an unknown city, and here we can definitely understand that Srila Prabhupada is speaking from his direct experience. If one enters an unknown city without friend or shelter, living in that city is more difficult than living in a forest. And that's exactly what Srila Prabhupada did. How many of us would do that? How many of us would go to a city with $7 without having any friends or any home there? Any means of making money, any means of eating, any means of preaching? Would we do that? Probably most of us would not do that. There are many big cities all over the surface of the globe, and wherever one looks, he sees a struggle for existence going on 24 hours a day. That's a fact. In New York City, at 11 o'clock at night, it's pretty much exactly the same as 11 o'clock in the morning. The city does slow down at about 4 o'clock in the morning. When we used to walk from our flat to the temple from Mangalarti, and then the only people out were the prostitutes going home and the drunks going home. A few taxis, everybody else was sleeping. But basically, until around 2:30 or 3, the city was alive, and then it woke up again at about 5:30. People rushed out in cars going 70 and 80 miles an hour, constantly coming and going. And this sets the scene of the great struggle for existence. One has to rise early in the morning and travel in that car at breakneck speed. Or sometimes you're in a traffic jam and you're traveling at snail speed. There is always a danger of an accident, and one has to take great care. In his automobile, the living entity is full of anxieties, and his struggle is not at all auspicious. Apart from human beings, other species like cats and dogs are also struggling very hard day and night for existence. Thus, the struggle for existence continues, and the conditioned soul changes from one position to another. For a while, he is a child, but he has to become a boy. For a boy, he has to change into a youth, and from youth to manhood and old age. You all remember this struggle? Was it just fun being a kid? You know, some of us may look back idyllically at our childhood, oh, it was nice then. But if you're not convinced, then ask the children, are you always happy? You know, to the little child, when the other kid takes their fire truck, it's for us like our house burned down. Right? The resident, the world's ended. You know, when you say you can't have a cookie, he's got to go to bed early, then he's ready to jump out the window. So this great suffering in childhood, and one of the children always wanting to become. They want to become adults tomorrow. My oldest grandson one time said to my son, how come you're always in charge? I want to turn. So then you become, from a boy, you change into a youth. So everybody remembers what it was like to be 12, 13, 14? Was that lots of fun? I don't think so. right? Bewildering. What happened to me? Who am I? Mind is all disturbed. And you have different anxieties, more anxieties. And from youth to manhood, so now we're adults. Is our life now? We wanted to be adults so much when we were children. Is it perfect? Now do we get to do whatever we want? Anybody here get to do whatever they want? And then old age. So some of us are knocking on the door of old age. It isn't very fun. Now I have to wear glasses to read. Maybe someday I'll have to put little things in my ears to hear like my father used to do. Maybe after a while I need a stick to walk. You know, everything starts breaking down. Can't eat as much as you want. Can't eat what you want. The people were thinking, when we're young, we're thinking, I remember thinking, if only I could be 7 years old, then I would be happy. Then when you're seven, you think, if only I was 12, then I'd be happy. When you're 12, you think, if only I was 16, then I'd be happy, right? Remember that? If you don't remember, hang out with kids for a while. And when you're 16, you think, only I graduate, then I'll be happy. And I'll finish with school. If only I get a good job, then I'll be happy. If only I get married, then I'll be happy. If only I can buy my own house, then I'll be happy. If only I have kids, then I'll be happy. And if only I didn't have to take care of this house. Oh, if only I could retire from family life, then. If only my kids grew up, then. When I retire, then I'll be happy. And when you retire, you think, oh, I made so many mistakes in my life. If only I could have another chance to do it over again. Finally, when the body is no longer workable, he has to accept a new body of different species. Giving up the body is called death, and accepting another body is called birth. The human form is an opportunity to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master and through him the Supreme Lord. This Krishna consciousness movement has been started to give an opportunity to all the members of human society who are misled by foolish leaders. No one can get out of the struggle for existence, which is full of miseries, without accepting a pure devotee of the Lord. The material attempt changes from one position to another, and no one actually gains relief from the struggle for existence. The only resort is the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master, and through him the devotee of the Lord. And through him the lotus feet of the Lord. So Prabhupada also says in the summary, that our initial coming to this world is Bhava Rupa. We turn our face from Krishna. We enter into the forest. So we have our real life. You can see on this table, there's a bowl of fruit. So that's real fruit. But this person there, instead of trying to get the fruit that's in the bowl, he's looking at the fruit in a mirror. So that is our situation. Actually, we have entered this forest looking for enjoyment when we already had enjoyment. We already had enjoyment. Well, when we come here, we want to have enjoyment as the center. But that is not possible. How can each of us be the center? It's not possible. Just like a little later on today, I think we're going to see a dance. So there you'll see how Krishna is the center. But suppose all of us want to be the center of the dance. What would happen? What would happen if you have a dance and everybody wants to be at the center? Chaos. People be bumping into each other, they'd be falling off the stage. So as soon as we all want to be the center, then immediately we're in conflict. We're in conflict with nature, which is like a stage. We're in conflict with other living entities, which are the other dancers. And we're even in conflict with ourselves. Therefore we get the miseries of the Adhikam. The fault is that we're trying to be the center. We're trying to get enjoyment. So, but Krishna is very kind, and he's created this forest of the material world, this illusion. Okay, go to try to find some profit there. And why is he created in illusion? Because how can it exist in reality? How can each of us be God in reality? I mean, when you be God, you have to have subjects. So if I want to be God, are all of you willing to be my devotees? I don't think so. You all want everybody to be your devotees, so that's not going to work. Who are the living entities that Krishna's going to supply to worship us? Nobody will agree. So how can it be created in reality? Therefore, it's created in illusion. And because it's an illusion, it's like a mirror. It looks like there's something there. But what happens if you try to grab the fruit in a mirror? What happens? Something happens. The mirror gets dirty from your fingerprints. What else happens? You probably hurt your hand. And you're still not satisfied. Right? This was this saying here, that we're not satisfied. I really like that. The Bhagavad Prati Yoga. You're never satisfied. Like the donkey with the carrot. Or like some of you trying to get something out of your mirror. Have you ever dreamt that you were eating? Anyone ever have a dream they were eating? Especially if I take a nap on a fast day. I'll dream that I'm eating. One time I took a little nap on a day when I was fasting from water, and I dreamt that I was just drinking water. Gallon jugs of water. And even in the dream I was thinking, why isn't this working? I woke up and like, why am I so thirsty? It took me a while. Oh yeah, it was just a dream. So no matter how much water you drink, no matter how much you eat in the dream, you wake up, you're still hungry and thirsty. It's not going to your body. But it's interesting, in a dream you can taste food, can't you? Isn't that interesting? You can taste water, you can taste food, you can feel things. We're talking about the senses. In a dream, are you able to get all sensory, the same sensory input you can get when you're awake? Can't you? Right? Isn't that interesting? That means that where is our sensory input coming from, really? The mind. It's all within the mind. Interesting, isn't it? It's all within the mind. So just like in a dream, it doesn't satisfy because it's not going to the gross body, even in this waking state, it doesn't satisfy because it's not going to the soul. The soul is not actually interacting with anybody or eating or doing all these things. The soul is just, what is Krishna saying in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita? The soul is just watching. He says, while the body is eating and drinking and so many things, right? He says, the soul is actually not doing anything at all. Of course, the soul is doing something. The soul is witnessing and desiring. So we're just under the spell of these modes. As it says here, it's daivi maya, daiviyesha, vinamayi, mamamaya, dharantiya. So it's Krishna's divine energy. And the trick is, when you have a mirror, it looks like fruit, doesn't it? It looks like it. And so just with our senses in mind, because it's saying we're taking in knowledge with our senses in mind, we can't understand why it's not working. It ought to work. Well, look, there's an apple right in front of me. Right? It ought to work. I ought to be able to take it and eat it. We just can't figure out why we're frustrated. You know, you get things and it's just like when I was saying, you're 5, you want to be 7, and you get to be 7 and you think, how come it's not working? Why is the happiness over there? And you get it, when you first get it, you think, now I've gotten it. I am now 7. I have achieved it. No, I have my wedding. I have my house, I walk in the door of my house. I have my new car, my new computer, my degree. And then, you know, a little while later you think, but nothing's changed really. So my degree's on my wall and the car's in the garage. You say garage, right? The car's in the garage. And I have my house and beautiful, intelligent children, and my spouse, and my money, and I still feel the same as I felt before. You experience that? You wake up, I'm the same person, nothing happened. this funny thing. When I got my PhD, I realized the next day I wasn't any smarter than I was before I got it. I was sort of disappointed. Well, I'm the same person. Nothing happened. I don't know any more than I did when I walked through the door. And it's just, well, how come it didn't work? Why did it make me happy? Because it's not real. It's not really happening. But we can understand that without the grace of Guru. It's not possible. It's not possible. What we want to understand it. All we'll understand is something's not working. That's as far as you can get just on the basis of your senses and mind. Something's not working here. And maybe you can come to like the impersonalist who will say, oh, it's because I want to enjoy. That's the problem. All my suffering is coming because I want to enjoy. So let me just give up the desire to enjoy. Then I won't suffer anymore. Well, that will work. But you won't enjoy it either. It'll just be neutral. The main leader of the Jains, Mahavir, he came to this conclusion. The modern leader of the Jains. And he went through 13 years of unbelievable stuff. Just unbelievable. You know, not wearing any clothes, in all kinds of weather, just eating only if people offered him food and then whatever they offered him. One time, I think he got a huge thorn in his eye and he didn't even try to take it out. Unbelievable. It took him 13 years to achieve the void. People throwing things at him. So by our logic and reason, we can say that. Okay, the reason I'm suffering, the reason things aren't working, is that I have a desire to enjoy, let me give up the desire to enjoy. And then you have to work so hard at squashing all of your desires. At squashing yourself, just repression. To achieve a state of neutrality. Because somehow or other we just never figure out what's the solution? What's this guy's solution? What does he have to do? He has to turn around. And you know, that just doesn't occur to him. Have you ever been in a situation where the solution is obvious and it just doesn't occur to you? It just doesn't even occur. Someone has to say, oh, why don't you try this? You're like, wow. Yeah. And the reason it doesn't occur to us is it looks like everything we want is right in front of us. Why should I turn around? It's there. I can see it. It's right there. What occurs to us is different ways of getting there. Well, maybe I have to go this way, maybe I have to go kind of behind the mirror, under it, around it, something like that. I have to go into the mirror. But why would it occur to us to turn around? So the guru comes and says, you're looking in the wrong place, my friend. It just doesn't exist here. By here, we're not talking about a physical location. Please don't think like that. That's exactly like thinking, you know, I'm going to go to New Zealand in December and London in July. And that way I'll be happy. In America, a lot of people do that with Florida and New Jersey. They call them the snowbirds. They go to Florida in the winter months and they go to New Jersey in the summer. This is not a question that, oh, we're in the material world and we want to go to the spiritual world, that we want to, like, move our physical location. That's not our problem. Frankly, if we went to the spiritual world with material consciousness, Radhan Maharaj likes to say, if you brought materialistic people to Vaikuntha, they'd say, I'm going to Hare Krishna. We wouldn't stay. We were already there. If you have a materialistic consciousness, the spiritual world actually isn't very attractive. Why? Because there you can't be the center. Everybody's running after Krishna. You're like, hey, what about me? Hey, what about me? Why are you all running after him? changing our consciousness. It's a question of changing our consciousness. What are we looking at? Like here, the devotees, they're compared to bumblebees. They're seeing, they're following Krishna. Anu Padavim. Anu means to follow. They're following Krishna. And what are we following? Our Indriya. Sat Indriya Vargina. We are following our senses. Oh, there's a nice apple. And this also isn't just something, okay, well, yes, I was with Krishna. Then I made a decision to turn away from him. Now I'm stuck here. Just due to one stupid mistake, I'm kind of like a victim. And at one point, I will make the decision to go back. No, it's not like that. Krishna is already here, as Maharaj was speaking about Sannyasi yesterday. He's here in his holy name. It's Gopakoti Goswami saying, when I chant the holy name, what did he say? It's like a festival happening in my mouth. Okay, Prabhupada would say that Krishna is dancing on your tongue. I was speaking to one devotee, second generation devotee, who said, one time when I was chanting, I was just really absorbed in the name. And I wanted to tell you that the name really is sweet. She said, it's not a metaphor. It's actually sweet. She said, I can feel this whole sweetness. That was Krishna dancing in my mouth. So Krishna's there. He's right there in the holy name that we're chanting every day, at least 1,728 times. Probably more, especially if we come to the kirtan. So Krishna's there. Krishna's there. He's actually there. Right? When the young Ramana from Vidyanagara came and said, my dear Lord, you please, you uphold the religious principle of this elderly Brahmin who promised me his daughter in marriage. Come and bear witness. And the Lord says, you just go there and think of me, and then I'll come be the witness. And he said, no, no, you have to come. And he said, whoever heard of a deity walking? And the young Brahmana said, whoever heard of a deity talking? So the Lord was defeated. He likes to be defeated by his devotee. So Krishna's there. Please don't think, you know. I mean, we may see just marble or brass or wood, and actually Krishna's there. So Krishna's there. Krishna's in his holy name. Krishna's in our heart. And you know what? Wherever there's Krishna, there must be Vrindavan. It's a nice little meditation by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur called Rupa Chintamani, where he starts off saying that in your heart of hearts is the whole Vrindavan. So you meditate on your heart of hearts as Vrindavan. The spiritual world is already here. Krishna is in our hearts, so Vrindavan's in our heart. Krishna's the holy name, Vrindavan's there, the holy name. The spiritual is there, the spiritual world is here. We call it Nubarshan, it's not just a word. The spiritual world is actually already here. For those people who turn their faces to Krishna, they're not living in the material world. Therefore, they can say, Nadinam Najanam Sundari Kamitam Bhajapadish Pami, Mama Janmani Janmani Swarya, we say Janme Janmani Prabhu say. You may think, how did anybody pray like that? I want to take birth again and again. Because they're not seeing that they're in the material world. So this is a choice we're making at every moment. It's not just there's some choice we made at a certain point in time, and now it's not like that. It's at every moment. Where am I turning my attention? Where am I looking for happiness? Because of Anandamaya Vyasa. This is all about the merchant looking for happiness. The merchant who's looking to make a profit. So where am I looking for happiness? In the mirror or in the fruit bowl? It's not that because Krishna is the enjoyer, that we don't enjoy him. Actually, the devotee enjoys more than Krishna, which is why Krishna likes to take the position of the devotee. So our process is not to negate the desire. Our process is not to negate the desire for enjoyment. Our process is to turn that desire, to turn around, and turn that desire to Krishna. So it's a question, what am I doing at every moment? Where am I looking for happiness? Where am I looking for happiness? Where am I looking for happiness? The search for happiness is not wrong. It's not that Sukadeva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, is condemning the search for happiness. But they're saying, find happiness where? Where should we find happiness? At? Who remembers? Hari, Guru, Charanar, Arvindam, Marukaram, Anupam. And that's what we should be asking ourselves over and over again. Where am I looking for happiness? Am I looking for happiness in this forest where there's owls and crickets and jackals and foxes and stones and dry rivers? Or am I looking for happiness at Krishna's feet, at the feet of the devotees, where their feet are more fragrant than lotuses, more soft than lotuses, and give unlimited shelter to all of us. So, of course, this is, we could speak about this verse in purport, I think, for a very long time, a few years at least. So, I hope that was all right. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes?
When you talk to devotees will be kind of, well, probably facing the state and otherwise felt that interior stuff in place, and that I may not be Krishna conscious, I always kind of felt that as I was growing up. So, you know, recently my husband's family came to stay just before we came last week, and there's a band living in all the family camps. So we have very close association with non devotees. And, you know, okay, there might have been a couple of people here that also had a sense of suffering and terrible, but although we can see that in their hearts is insecurity and anxiety from a philosophical point of view, you know, they really can't see that. So why is it that one person can see more clearly suffering over another? Do we all have to, you know, we all have to come to that point that we have to really suffer and see through the eternity? Like, they really, like, they're quite successful and they've got money and everything, so it's easier.
Do you have to be externally miserable? Is that your question? Do you have to come to an externally miserable condition?
Well, you may not have to be externally miserable, but you may have some perception that, you know, there's more in life.
There has to be some perception. Krishna mentions that in the 13th chapter when he lists the process of knowledge, and he says the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. One has to be able to have some perception that actually it's miserable. And one way it's miserable, as Maharaj was saying last night, Dukalyam or Shashvatam, is even if you're successful, it's all temporary. In fact, the more material happiness you have, the more you suffer. And the reason for that is that it's temporary. So if you get the, you know, the status, you get the, just like right now in America, there are people trying to be president of the United States. So if, let's say, you achieve that, you become president of the United States, you get, you know, you live in a big, you become like Bill Gates, you're the richest person, you achieve that. The more you have, the more you're going to be in anxiety that you're going to lose it. One of my mother's favorite songs is from a Broadway musical. I've got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I've got no home, got no car, got no family. Folks with plenty of plenty, they keep a lock on their door. They're always afraid someone will steal it while they're out getting more. You know, the more you have, the more you're worried that you're going to lose it, because you are going to lose it. It's not if, it's when and how. It's a definite, absolute certainty. So, you know, let's say that I give you a really, really nice house, a gorgeous house, more beautiful than this temple. It's your house. It's all yours. You have a big property like this, all yours. And we'll landscape the whole thing, make it all gardens and trees and fountains. You'll have at least 30 servants taking care of the gardens, or whatever your desire is. Now we have our desires, whatever it may be. So let's say you were given exactly what you wanted. And along with that, you're given a little notice. We're not going to let you know how long you get to keep this. You may get to keep it for only a minute. You may get to keep it for 5 minutes. You may get to keep it for 50 years. However, at some point, every single thing that's here is going to be claimed. Could you enjoy it? Is it possible? Well, I always give the analogy of a meal. So you're given a nice meal. So let's say we go down to breakfast, and let's say breakfast this morning is really a feast of all your favorite preps. Just the things you like the most. Maybe something even you haven't eaten in a long time. Like I haven't had a real lugu for a long time. They used to be standard ISKCON fare. I remember Tawakishmar saying how one time they were eating lugu, and Prabhupada said to him, "These are just like what Mother Yasoda sends to the forest with Krishna." All your favorite, right in front of you. And then right behind you is a police officer who says, "I want to let you know I have a warrant for your arrest." You say, "Can I finish the meal?" "I don't know. As soon as I get a call from my supervisor, I have to bring you in. It could be any second." Do I have a half an hour to finish the meal? I don't know. Maybe. Are you going to enjoy your meal? In fact, the nicer the meal, the more upset you're going to be. If it was just old bread, then you're thinking, "Okay, well, if I have to leave a meal of old bread, oh well." But if it's lungos and samosas, cotton bodies, tamarind chutney, paneer sabji, then you're going to be lamenting and angry, right? And fearful. "Oh, I might not get to it. What do I eat first? Oh my God. I eat this, I'm going to just do that. Oh, I have to leave it. Oh God." So how can you always say enjoyment? Prabhupada says it's like sweet rice mixed with sand. Oh, and some of you are very young and beautiful. All modest. Look at really old people. And we all know it's coming, you know. At my age, it's already come. It's like, is that my mother in the mirror? It's like that. Okay? So, but you gotta, actually, they're always feeling it. Why don't they see it? Because they don't want to see it. Because as soon as you see it, you have to do something about it. If you cannot enjoy it, as soon as you become conscious of that, you cannot enjoy material life. You've got to forget that there's this policeman or police officer. You've got to forget about it. And when you're, as soon as you remember him, you can't enjoy your food anymore. So you block it out. And in human life, you can't block it out entirely. The animals can block it out pretty much entirely. But we can't. You know, there's always this little nagging thing, "Who is that guy standing behind me anyway?" So if there's... you can't completely walk in. But that's Krishna's kindness. And that's our free will to come to the point of saying, "There's something's wrong here. Something's funny. I don't know what it is, but something's really funny here. Something's not, you know, I want some answer." And Super Soul hears that, and then he starts reciprocating. Check that song. Is that all right? And if you try to wake up a materialist who doesn't want to be woken up, they'll just become very angry. Yes?
Sometimes you get to the point where you realize there's a lot of misery, and in Christian consciousness there's a lot of enjoyment. But I get frustrated because I still find myself a lot of most of the time wanting to be the center and not passing that enjoyment for Christian's pleasure. So it's a little frustrating. You're still...
Well, that's good that you started to realize that. See, materialistic people don't even understand that. If you said to a materialistic person, "You want to be the center," they say, "No, I don't. I'm not like that." So part of what happens is we become, you know, we become aware of the sky standing over our shoulder, essentially. We start becoming aware of the nature of illusion. We're not, we're the ones holding on to the illusion. We are the ones who have to be willing to let go. So in order to let go, we have to see it, and we have to become, you know, disgusted by it. So Krishna will keep putting that in front of you. And eventually when you say, you know, I'm tired of that, Krishna, you can be in the middle of the rest of the world. That's okay. We'll put you in order of money there. I don't need to be there. You can be in the center of the countered boys. All of them down in the tree, everyone. They're all giving you, you can have that. I'm happy even if I'm just a blade of grass that your devotees walk on and no one even knows I exist except you. It says that Krishna walks on each blade of grass every day. He's reciprocating, and I'm satisfied that I'm getting that reciprocation from you, Krishna. And when we come to that point, then we'll be able to leave that. We say, I'm happy just that Krishna loves me, and Krishna thinks that I'm important, and Krishna, to Krishna, I'm the most wonderful. That's Krishna makes each of his devotees feel like they're the most wonderful. And that's good enough for me. I don't need to try to be a false center. But until we've done that, then Krishna will keep showing us over and over and over again, hey, this is what you're doing, this is what you're doing, this is what you're doing, this is why you're suffering, this is why you're suffering. And there's this, it says in the Bhagavatam, two people are enjoying, the fools and the transcendentalists, and everyone in between is suffering. So there's generally this period in our spiritual endeavor. Prabhupada says it's a hard struggle with determination. He says until nishtha, it's a hard struggle with determination. Why is it a hard struggle? Because we're no longer an illusion, and yet we're not fully in Krishna consciousness either. We're holding on to things that we know are making us suffer. It's kind of an odd situation. You know? Yes, this is making me suffer, but I'm still one. Therefore, Prabhupada says one can become Krishna conscious in a moment, but generally that's not the case, generally. I mean, Krishna says, Bhagavan Dhanam Dhanam. And this is probably not our first time doing this. So the three things Rupa Goswami says we need: enthusiasm, patience, and confidence. So be confident we keep on, that we'll achieve the goal, to be enthusiastic, and to be also patient. If you're only patient, that's a mode of ignorance. If you're only enthusiastic, that's a mode of passion. You want to be both. All right? But it's good that we see that. Ordinary people. So that's a good sign. It's a good sign. And I'll teach this more another time, but there are four steps in learning anything. Usually I draw it on the board. So first is unconscious incompetence, then conscious incompetence, then conscious competence, then unconscious competence. So unconscious incompetence, you're a Maya and you don't know you're a Maya. Conscious incompetence, you're a Maya but you know you're a Maya. That's a really good, that's always the first step. Then conscious competence. You're serving Krishna, but you're doing it deliberately. What am I supposed to do now? Am I supposed to chant my mantras? Am I supposed to go to Mother Bharati? Oh yeah, I'm supposed to worship Krishna. I'm supposed to have the right attitude. What am I supposed to do? Where's my wisdom? I go to wisdom. And then unconscious incompetence, automatic, spontaneous. So everybody wants to skip the two middle, the conscious incompetence and the conscious competence. We all want to jump from unconscious incompetence to unconscious competence. I want to go from being in Maya and not knowing I'm in Maya to just naturally being in love with Krishna. Sorry. It's like anything else. You know, a little kid doesn't drive and they don't know that they don't know how to drive. They're not even aware. And at one point they become aware. Oh, mommy and daddy know how to drive and I don't. You know, and then they get behind the car. And if you have a stick shift, especially, you're stalling. You're doing it wrong, but you know you're doing it wrong. You're aware, oh yeah, I'm not getting that dance between the clutch and the petrol. And then you're doing it right, but you're really focusing. Everything's got to be focused on driving, okay? Oh, your turn signal. Oh, yeah, okay, I'll do this. Oh, you do it the other way, you shift with the signal. learned how to drive on the side, but at least I had an automatic. I didn't have to learn how to shift with my hands. Okay, I gotta do this. This would be what happened if I had to drive a manual in New Zealand. I'd go back to the conscious confidence platform. First, second, third, fourth, I have to learn how to shift. What do I do now? Oh, this, lost all again. Ah, okay, you know, do it again. But once you learn how to drive, then you're just driving. You think about that in the morning. When you're driving, you just drive. You can listen to a lecture on your CD. You can talk to your friend. You say you're driving on automatic pilot, right? You just know where to go. So if you notice you're on the unconscious, you're on the conscious incompetence platform, that's a very good sign of progress. Oh, I'm noticing how much Maya I'm in. Very good. It's not bad. And the next step is you're intentionally Krishna conscious. And then the spontaneous will come. And I think these are our Jai and Vijay telling me that I have to stop. Look very ominous. I think it's already time for breakfast. Does anyone else have any other comment, question, chastisement, addition, subtraction?
It was interesting that Prabhupada translated that word guru as devotee.
Yes.
And usually he would translate the state as guru.
As guru.
You got any?
No, not a clue. Why did that? Anything else? Okay, so we just go through one more time. Hari Guru Charanaravindam Madhu Param Anu Paravim, which means Krishna, the devotees, lotus feet, and the devotees are like bumblebees following the feet. Yes. So that's what we're going to work on. At least I'm going to try to do it today. And any of us who would like to do that. So we're going to try to turn our mind at every moment from the reflection to the reality. And we're making that choice at every moment. And when we fully turn to the reality, then we will see the smiling face of Radha Deen Hari saying, I'm so glad that you have